Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Catholic Singles. Every day, hundreds of Catholic singles join CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love. Breadbox Media listeners get 20% off by using the promo code BREADBOX when they register. Come be our next success story at CatholicSingles.com. Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Hollow is here to help. Hollow is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Hollow has something for everyone. Hollow is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.hollow.app/breadbox.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Lisa Hendy and Friends Show. I'm delighted to have on the show today a beautiful guest. Peggy Weber is an award-winning journalist and author who's been working at her craft for almost 40 years, primarily within the Catholic press. Peggy is the author of the popular Spun from the Web column, and she loves her faith, family, baseball, and chocolate, but not necessarily in that order. Peggy loves to laugh a lot, often at herself, which helps her to feel truly enough. She lives in Western Massachusetts with her dear husband, John, and relishes frequent visits from her seven grandchildren. She joins us today to discuss a delightful new book that she's written, Enough As You Are, from Loyola Press. Welcome to the show, Peggy Weber.
Oh, Lisa, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's a treat. And, you know, you and I go a few years back, and I'm such a fangirl of not just Peggy Weber, but the entire Weber family. I've had a chance to meet and love you and the work of your children. Before we dive into talking about the book, I always like to ask an opening question of my guests, and that is for you to kind of just tell us a little bit of a story about where you are right now in your faith journey, or something kind of unique about your faith journey.
Ironically, every time I have a moment where I'm doubting myself or getting anxious about something, lately my adult children, as you know, Carrie, Matthew, and Elizabeth, go, Mom, go back and reread your book. So in my own faith journey, I find myself trying to reabsorb all the great feelings, as you know from writing, and all that wisdom that the Holy Spirit seems to pour into you, and I'm trying to not only remind myself of my book, but also to live it. So in my faith journey right now, God is blessing me with seeing the world through the eyes of a five-year-old, three-year-olds, two one-year-olds, and three one-year-olds. The other two are almost two. And so that's where I am in my faith journey on that. I'm also lucky enough to be doing a Bible study on Wednesdays with some lovely women in our diocese. And I'm also happy to be witnessing the Catechesis of the Good Shepherd, which is for 3 to 6-year-olds that my daughter's running. And I watch the 1-year-old, but I also get to witness these holy little children literally walking into the atrium with their hands folded. And there's this quiet and beauty. So I'm like all over the place with faith, but I'm so happy. I just love God and I love our faith, warts and all.
I have to ask you, Peggy, how, I don't think I know the story of how you got started in the Catholic press. I've intersected with your career at lots of different points, and I was looking on the W shelf on my bookcase today, which is filled up with wonderful Weber works, and so not just from you, but from your kids. But I know your first book came out several years ago, but how'd you get started with writing?
Well, writing for me has always just been a love. Perhaps it was sparked by my 7th grade award-winning essay for Catholic Charities at Holy Name Grammar School, where the prize was, I always say to kids nowadays, what do you think the prize was? And they're like, a gift certificate. Not this. I said, no, it was a crucifix. So,
really?
Yep. And so I won that essay contest. Then I would write a little bit more. One time, this gives you an idea how old I am. They could keep you after school. Just like no worries about bus. You're all staying after for whatever naughtiness we had done in seventh grade, which could have been something as simple as like, you know, leaving trash on the floor. And we all had to. This one, though, I do remember was because we weren't as nice to our substitute teacher as we should have been. And I remember everybody had to, was given in, to write an essay called The Substitute. And so I wrote this book. I mean, I wrote the essay and I decided to take a different way. And I wrote about a seeing eye dog because I had just read a book, of course. I love to read. I lived at the library near my house. And I wrote about how this dog was substitute eyes. And the teacher came back and said, you are the only person that didn't write about a substitute teacher. And those kind of things just sort of sparked you. Then I worked on the school newspaper at Cathedral High School. Then I worked at the college newspaper at Providence College. And then I came home from college and taught high school for 2 years. But I always had this hunger to write. And God bless Marquette University. They took a chance on me, and they gave me a scholarship. And I went out to Milwaukee. And that's really how the Catholic Press entered in, because there are very few places that offer journalism from a Catholic school. And so I was introduced to a Jesuit education, I was introduced to Catholic journalism, and I was able to even freelance out there. And that's where I actually got to attend a press conference with Mother Teresa when she was given an award.
Wow.
Right. I, of course, as the story goes, I had 20 questions, all things I wanted to ask her. But I was just a young, newly married, I had just gotten my master's, newly married, little cub reporter. And all the big wigs are there asking Mother Teresa all the big questions and the hard questions. And I looked down my list. They've been asked, that's been asked, that's been asked. All my questions have been asked. But she's there, and I want to talk to Mother Teresa. So I raise my hand and go, Mother Teresa? Yes. She looks at me with a little smile. I go, are you considering retiring? Because she was like in her 60s, which to me seemed like so old. And I am now in my 60s. And she just gave me this smile like, oh my God, you poor thing. But she was so gracious. She says, no, I will not retire myself from the work of God.
Oh my gosh, I can't imagine.
So that could have been where my Catholic journalism career might have ended, but thank God it did not. So anyway, so I worked there, and then when we moved back out east, I was lucky enough to start freelancing for the Catholic Communications Office here, which was then at the Catholic Observer. And then all of a sudden it expanded, and I became a television producer, and then I came home from one story and said, I really want to write about the story, but I want to write how I felt at that story. And they gave me my column, Spun from the Web, and all sorts of things. Just, you know, how God's providence just drives you one way or another, you know, and here I am now today. And I retired because of some, we have all our grandchildren, all seven of them, with an eighth on the way, Lisa, in July.
Carrie's congrats!
Yep, Carrie's expecting her third, so that will happen. So they're all under the age of five. And so there's just like, I knew every time I went into work, I love my work, but I wanted to be with these kids. And so my husband was gracious enough. So I still do a little freelancing. And then as well, I had the opportunity to, you know, submit an idea to Loyola that came in on a Good Friday afternoon. And it's in the introduction of the book where I was sitting there thinking, as I listened to the priest talk about how God loves us, God dies for all of us. There's like always a little bit, I think, maybe everyone doesn't feel this, but I felt this. I like, even me, God died for me. Like, I know it, but I don't always feel it. I always feel truly, Lord, I am not worthy, but like not in that way, but more like, I don't know about me. And then we went back for Killian's first birthday party. Of course, it's a Good Friday. We're down in New Jersey, and Carrie looks at me and says, am I doing enough for him? We're just having cheese pizza and this little cake. And I just realized, oh my gosh. That's something that haunts all of us at all ages for different reasons. And then the book just sort of fell into place. So.
Yeah, and the book, so Enough As You Are, so it's got a really interesting format. Can you kind of walk us through this cycle, this beautiful pattern that you do in each of the chapters and kind of unfold what the chapters look like themselves?
Right. I think, you know, the beauty, I think, of this is that it takes us through all different stages of life. So it's not just for parents who are wondering if they're doing enough. It's not for, you know, married people wondering if they love enough. It's for people who have had grief. It's people who are getting older. And so Each chapter begins with a quote from the patron saint and journalist, as you well know, Lisa, St. Francis de Sales. And I selected him because I've always loved him, but also because he was one of the first people who went out to try and convert the Calvins in the Calvinists in Switzerland. And he did it in such a kind and good way. And he just kept writing tracts and slipping them under their door and knocking at their door. And he persisted thoughtfully and sweetly. And his message was to everyone, be who you are and do that perfectly well. And he told everyone, you all have a path to holiness. It's not just for nuns and priests. I like to say that he was Mr. Rogers before there was a Mr. Rogers, in the sense that he was, he tried to tell people, he's very encouraging and very positive. So after that, then I usually have a theme, you know, whether it's holy enough, smart enough, feeling enough, friends enough, loved enough, good enough. And from there, I give some usually personal anecdotes or anecdotes of other people from stories. Then I have what I call a saintly inspiration that seems to embody every chapter. For instance, if you don't feel smart enough, well, look at the life of St. André de Sète and how he was sent to the monastery at a young age as a holy person, but they were saying, he's not too bright, just give him a job there and please watch him, because he came from a family where his father had died. And the pastor said, I'm sending you a saint, but a son, André said, so they put me at the door. They made him a porter. He worked in the prison. They said, they put me at the door and left me there for 40 years, thinking, all right, well, we'll take him, but, you know, here, just stand here and open the door. Don't do any trouble. More than a million people came to his funeral because of his holiness and his wisdom. And you know, think of all, I'm not putting down scholarship, I'm not putting down intellectual value, because I certainly want a brain surgeon who's smart. But there's, you know, the whole idea of, when you don't feel smart enough, did St. André ever feel that? Or did he recognize, I have a different kind of intelligence or a social intelligence or a gift? I don't even know if he went that far. But that's the saintly inspiration I use in that story. And then at the end, I use the examen, which of course is appropriate for Loyola Press.
Yes,
where
absolutely.
You walk through the examen, which for those that don't know, it's like a sort of a check at night, or some people could do it in the morning as well as sleep at night, where they look at their day, examine it, literally say, how did it go? What could I have done better? Make amends and resolve to do more. And then I also put in actions or suggested ideas of what you could do, you know, for each one, like with stuff enough. What could you honestly do to make yourself realize you have enough stuff? Or what could you do to live more simply? So, you know, that's sort of the summary, I guess.
I love the examine focus because, well, that's a traditional form of prayer that many of us are familiar with. What you've done in the book is actually to tailor the examine to each of the chapters to really kind of give you a point of checking in. Was that something that you had in mind when you set out to write the book, or did that come up during the actual process of writing it?
It came through brainstorming, you know, and I have to give credit to Joellen from Loyola Press, the head publisher, Joan Ciccarelli. I hope I'm saying her name right. I always say Ciccarelli, that she and I did some back and forth about what, you know, I like the idea, I like your stories, I like this. Let's work around, and then, you know, she came up with have something at the end that makes it more interactive with the readers, and I said, well, how about this? The exam. And it's like, yes, you know how conversations go. And then you start talking and things unfold. And I really, I of course have always just loved writing more than any other form of communication. I got ink on my fingers. And sitting down on summer nights and just saying, where am I going tonight? You know, and then cranking it all out, you know, with the Red Sox baseball in the background with the sound on. it was a delight.
I can just imagine you. I'm wondering, you've got some beta readers around there. Were your author children involved in any glances at the early drafts of the book?
Oh, not only involved. All three of my children, of course, and I've done this actually ever since I started writing my column, because often my column, as you know, was on a family page and it involved stories about them. And I would never, ever publish anything from like sixth grade on without them looking it over. So they've always felt free to give their input. And Carrie gave their keen eye of editing. You know, as her my daughter Carrie, in case people don't know, is the an editor at America Magazine. And my darling Matthew is just like this creative genius who would be like, yes, but couldn't you say it this way? Or what if you used an example that really reached the, you know, and he just, and he also was my biggest champion at Loyola, saying, you know, initially when they were, you know, when I say the opportunity presented itself, it presented itself in part because Matthew was like, my mom's a really good writer. You should look at doing it. And then my daughter, Elizabeth, who is just this deep philosopher, thinker, theologian, and seat of wisdom, smarter than, she was smarter at age three than I ever was, like, was precise with everything. I think, you know, she proof it just like for her grammar, which is impeccable, but also just like, I think maybe you want to look at this, or do you want to point out this part? And so I was very blessed. I suppose all Webbers maybe could be on the cover.
Well, as is always the case with any good book, we want to dive more deeply into the pages with author Peggy Webber. We're going to take a quick break now, and when we come back, we'll look into the individual chapters and some of the material that's covered in Enough As You Are, which is a beautiful new book out from Loyola Press. So stay with us, and we'll be right back.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by CatholicSingles.com is ringing in the new year with savings for singles. You can save 20% by using the promo code BREADBOX when you register for a new account. Come meet other faithful Catholics and make 2020 a year to remember.
Welcome back to the Lisa Hendigan French Show, and we're rejoined by our beautiful guest, Peggy Webber, a fascinating storyteller and author of the brand new book from Loyola Press, Enough As You Are. Peggy, you know, looking at this book and looking at the message of the book, which is really that God created us, that we need to often remind ourselves that He has made us with a unique and personal mission. Too often, I think I am guilty of kind of keeping my eyes on everybody else's lane except my own. And so I think that the message of this book is so timely, especially in today's social media world that we're living in. What are you hearing from readers about how they perceive what you're trying to encourage them with in the book?
You know, as you know, Lisa, you know, written so many books and had so much interaction, it's always a delight when you just get an email from a random person that just says, I really love this book. You know, it's really touched my soul. And my little prayer group is meeting at Panera and we're going to discuss it. They're just like, oh, all right. I also have given a couple of talks where people respond. One thing some people say to me is that, you know, I think they wish more young people would actually read this book. Because with youth suicide up, like I think 56%, and with people just, you know, so anxious about themselves, and as you said, their social media profile, how many likes do you get? And all of a sudden you judge your worth and your value by clicks or pictures or invitations. And so I think that what I'm getting back from people is that they want more and more people to read this and to dwell in it and to really take it to heart. And I have to say the book is very readable, and it's actually, I would have to say, two-thirds funny, because I have a very self-effacing humor, so a lot of the stories I make fun of myself. And I think I've also heard from young moms who say, oh man, this is me. Even though my stories are based on, you know, I'm obviously not an active parent of young people now, they still have that sort of sense of wanting to do enough, but it's almost, I think, compounded by they can now Google, you know, what should I be doing? I just sort of winged it more so at my age, you know?
Oh, yeah. I remember when I first had my kids, my mom, I'm the eldest of five, so my mom is a parenting expert. And I remember having my eldest child, Eric, and being so confirmed about the fact that I knew more than my mom did because I had read this silly book, like What to Expect When You're Expecting, and, you know, was up on all of the latest parenting techniques. And so when my mom in those first few weeks of Eric's life offered me words of advice, I remember thinking, well, what is she talking about? She doesn't know, you know, we don't put kids to sleep on that side anymore. We do it this way or whatever. Some of those things that change, you know, every few years. And then I remember kind of having this revelation when he was was maybe 5 or 6 weeks old and I was just absolutely drowning, that her wisdom was so awesome. And I think something about maybe becoming a grandparent actually provides you a little bit of perspective and maybe even a chance to kind of look back on some of the things that you did that you wish you might have done differently. So Peggy, I'm wondering, was there a chapter in the book that was particularly challenging for you to write?
Well, some would argue quiet enough has to be an extreme challenge. And for most people who know me, the idea of me being quiet is an oxymoron. Quiet Peggy does not exist. Although, and that's my challenge actually personally as I get older, to try and listen more to people, listen more to everyone, and listen more to the voice of God instead of my usual, okay, God, I hear what you're saying, but this is what I think should happen. And also just in terms of finding quiet. When I was in college, I adored Thomas Merton and read everything possible that he could write at the time. And then then you just get caught up in life and you're going and you're going and you're going. And even now, your phone's dinging, your computer's buzzing and, you've got, check your Twitter, check your Facebook. And I'm not even half connected as you are, But I think now for me, that chapter was the hardest to write to make sure I wasn't a hypocrite about it. Do you know what I mean? Because I know it's a need, but I also had to be of that one. That's the one I'm probably the most guilty. Like I'm fine with accepting that I'm pretty good about not wanting too much stuff. And I certainly, have a pretty good self-awareness of recognizing I'll never be cool and that I, can make fun of myself for different things, that I've done and, making taco gravy by mistake and, accepting, where I fit in the world and how I am comfortable. But I think that was probably the biggest challenge.
I want to ask you about that stuff chapter. So that is one of the ones that really stuck out to me in this book. I mean, a lot of times when we look at books like these, we focus on sort of our internal monologues. But in this chapter on stuff enough, I'll begin with the quote that you share from St. Francis de Sales, who said, "Our possessions are not ours. God has given them to us to cultivate, that we may make them fruitful and profitable in his service. And so doing, we shall please him." You go on to kind of share some very interesting statistics on, the state of the world and those who live in it. Talk a little bit about this chapter and about how you connect it to the saintly inspiration from St. Ignatius of Loyola.
Well, for me, I think the first thing that hit home when, I actually was inspired. If you recall, when you were talking about the fires in California, what would you grab and run with and go? What really matters to you? And what would I grab with and go? What, if I looked around my house now, I have all these little knickknacks, memorabilia, but what really matters? And ultimately, when you end your life, everyone's going to look around and go, what am I going to do with this now? You know what I mean? So you just sort of have to take a deep breath and look at your stuff. But more importantly, are you giving the message that your children or grandchildren have to have the Paw Patrol this? Or I'm just, this is the thing. Or the, and in this case, I tell the story initially that when Carrie was 2, we were out in Wisconsin visiting my father-in-law who was ill with cancer. And Cabbage Patch Dolls were the rage. Like riots in the stores. And my sister-in-law worked at Kohl's out there and got a call that a shipment had come in. So she calls my sister-in-law, who has 2 boys, and says, "They're in. If you want some, come now." And so here we are, out visiting family, and the 2 of us jump in the car, drive 45 minutes to get these dolls, and then we run home with them, and we are so pleased. We think we've hit the jackpot. We now have the hottest toy. And of course, I present this to 2-year-old Carrie at Christmas, who just looks at it, and we actually have video of it, and she looks at it, and she hands it back to me and goes to another toy. Of course she would. It was a nice doll, but she was more interested, I think, in Matthew's fire truck or drum set or the next present coming or the tea set. It was more interactive.
Or the wrapping paper.
Definitely. And so I think it was just, for me, that's how I, lead it. But then you just look around. And, and I ended, I think, by saying that perhaps I'll be at the gates of heaven and God will say, "Were you aware of all the starving people in the world?" "Yes, Lord." "And yet you still upgraded your phone? You just insisted you had it?" "Yes, Lord." "Okay. All right. Just just clear on that. All right, thank you. You know, and so then you just have to honestly look at yourself in a hard light and say, you know, I am definitely not cut out to be. I've seen you go, Lisa, to far places. I would like go with a full suitcase of granola bars and water because I'm not an adventuresome eater, and I'm also scared of flying. So it would be a lot of problems. So I know that about myself, and so I know I will do more for the poor, but it won't be the way you do it, you know. And then I have to realize, well, what can I do and how can I do it?
Yeah, how can I do it in the context of my life? I want to ask you about a chapter that was really particularly challenging for me, and that's chapter 10, which is called Holy Enough. Now, in this chapter, you start off, Peggy, by saying these words. You say, you can write this one down or just think about it. What or who is a holy person, or what makes a person holy? Perhaps your first response is, not me, I'm not holy. Upon further reflection, you might identify the qualities you admire in holy people. If you're willing to think about it just a bit harder, you might find what path to holiness you will choose. So let's talk a little bit about that, because even with faith issues, we have a tendency to look around ourselves in church or online and say, oh, XYZ person is so much more prayerful than I am, or look at their life, they're doing this and doing that. What's the answer to recognizing that we're holy enough?
Well, you know, that's where I often say, and it's actually in a different chapter, impressive enough, where your business card should read, I'm a child of God. And once you feel that way and you feel that you are a child you love, then everyone else is your brother and sister. And so you and I might think, oh, we don't feel holy enough. But I think we've also had the shoe on the other foot. But there are some people who designate what really is holy. So if you're not doing X or you're not doing Y, you're not really Catholic or you're not really Christian or you're really not good enough. And I've been made to feel that way sometimes, you know, like, you know, my book is Folksy Spirituality. Well, it's not the Summa, and I tell people that. So, but that's not really serious enough, you know, and you're like, okay, thank you. You know, and I allow people to have input, and I respect that too. But I think that's the thing about St. Francis de Sales, and then one of the most recent, you know, missives from our Pope, who talked about the path to holiness and how we all have our own way. For some, it'll be straight down that social justice path, and for others, it'll be straight into Eucharistic adoration, and for some, it'll be the blending of all of that, you know, and obviously, both have to be driven by the Lord. And so, for me, I know I say I'm a piece of cheese in a saint sandwich, and I look at my parents, and I look at my children, and I look the way they all live out their faith. And those are the path I see. Those are the people I admire, how they live it out. So,
and you know, in this chapter, you actually do give a little bit of a profile of St. Francis de Sales as the saintly inspiration. And I mean, it makes sense to me that you would turn to him because you are a writer and a storyteller. But maybe you can tell people just a little bit more about his life and sort of, I know that you've probably made your way through Introduction to the Devout Life more than one time. So, you know, what we can find in his work that's so relevant still, even in the 21st century.
Well, you know, the really cool part about him is, as I said to you before, that the whole Salesian ministry, you know, he is responsible for the Visitation nuns, who were women who wanted to be religious but were too old or widowed or had other issues. And so therefore he worked with those women. And then we have a clergy visitation monastery here in Western Massachusetts, but they're also the ones that run the teaching ministry, so that he permitted it to be at that time a more flexible religious life. So he was more open to saying, okay, you want to be a nun, but you can't be them. We'll just start a new organization. And so I really admire that about him. He was born, I actually have a little note here, in 1567, and only lived to 1622. So if you think about it, the impact he made. But as I told you before, he ministered to all the people around him, but he almost didn't really want all the stuff that he had to do. He wanted to just live a humble life, but then he recognized that he wanted to persuade and evangelize. He did it mostly through writing, but also through his personal kindness. And I think, you know, we can talk all about grand ideas, and some people will make big impacts, but if I'm nice to the, like today I just had a clerk who was wonderful at the bank, and I walked over to the manager and said, I gotta tell you, she helped me through this. You know, my bank's merging, so of course everything's haywire. So I said, she helped me through all this online stuff which I'm not comfortable. So please know you have a nice employee. She couldn't have been nothing but kindness. you know. And managers usually don't get people coming up to them to say that. They usually get people coming up to say,
yeah, they're waiting for the other shoe to drop, I think.
Right. We did that actually Carrie's first year of seeing Santa. We asked the manager at Gimbel's, at Christmas, when there was a Gimbel's, we called him and said, we just want to tell you Santa was tremendous. And he was so relieved because they just said, you know, manager, we've got parents here who want to talk to you about Santa. Running like sweat coming down his forehead. And so I always think that St. Francis de Sales is that person. He's the person that takes the time to say, great job. Or someone holds the door for you. You know, you just say, thank you. I've often, I know you can get away with a lot when you're older now. I go, you go home and tell your mother that she raised a gentleman. That was very kind of you. And you'd be surprised. And today I actually bought milk at a store and I bought so much of it because it was on sale. The young kid behind the counter who had like literally piercings in every possible spot. And he would look, oh my God, this kid's scary. He said, let's bring that up to your car. And I said, just thank you. And it was just like, see, God, God's saying to you, don't judge. Don't judge.
Well, yep. Peggy Weber, the book, again, it's called Enough As You Are, Overcoming Self-Doubt and Appreciating the Gift of You. This is available from Loyola Press. I'm wondering, in the seconds that we have left, any closing thoughts for our listeners?
Well, yes, it's also available on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And if you like it, leave a good review. If you don't, I guess I have to take it, but try to be kind.
Be kind enough. Well, Peggy, how can people get in touch with you if they want to bring you out for a speaking engagement or connect with a reading group with the book?
Well, I guess they could contact Loyola Press that way, or they could actually, if you post it, my email, spunfromtheweb@gmail.com. I'd be happy to go out and speak. It's actually one of those things where my mother used to say, you could talk a dog off a meat wagon. I just love going out and talking to people and meeting them and hearing their stories and sharing my story. So I'd be glad to do that.
Well, you are amazing, Peggy. So grateful for the gift of your time. And we'll have all that information in our show notes. And friends, that is it for this week's episode of Lisa Hendy and Friends. Find all of our previous episodes and information on today's guest, Peggy Weber. And find my contact information at my website, lisahendy.com. Until next time, I hope you have an awesome day. And God bless.
Redbox Media Programming is brought to you by... A few minutes each day can change your life during Lent. Ave Maria Press offers booklets for daily devotion, reflection, and more from such best-selling authors as Gary Zemak, Greg Kandra, Father Michael White, and Tom Corcoran, and so many more. Looking for Stations of the Cross booklets or books that are perfect for small groups? We have those too. Head over to AveMariaPress.com. And use code LENT20 to get 20% off your order today. Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small batch artisan coffee using top tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic-themed coffees, available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/Breadbox Media. Experience coffee like never before.